are Locked On Yankees, your daily New York Yankees podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome.
You're listening to the Locked On Yankees podcast, which is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Stacey Gottsoulias, and I'm the host of Locked On Yankees. I'm a baseball writer turned podcast host, and you may have read my work at places like Baseball Prospectus, the Hardball Times, and the ESPN Sweet Spot blog. You can find me on Twitter at my personal account, Stace Gotts, or at the Locked On Yankees handle, which is Locked On Yankees, all one word. Please feel free to tweet questions or comments to either account. We also have an Instagram account that I promise to get better at. But if you'd like to leave me a message there, feel free, and I will answer as soon as possible. If you're a new listener, hello and welcome. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. I hope you all enjoy today's episode. I'm going to admit to you right now, I was not sure what I wanted to talk about today. I had two things that I didn't think would fill the 15 minutes, and then I saw a tweet about 5 minutes ago that got me riled up, so here we go. I'll be ranting again like I did on yesterday's show, but about a completely different topic. Then Pinstripe Alley brought two events to my attention thanks to their This Day in History article that they put up every day, and I find some of it amusing. A lot of it has to do with contracts and money. And then the third thing that we'll be talking about today is a game from 2002. But first, you can get Locked On Yankees and all other Locked On podcasts straight to your phone in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Himalaya, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. And when you get into your car, you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Yankees. Every single year, the last, I would say, 9 or 10 years, I promise myself that I'm not going to get riled up about Hall of Fame voting, and without fail, I get riled up by Hall of Fame voting. In some ways, it's good that some of these writers are making their ballots public so we can see how the votes are tallied, and not all of them are public, and there are some ballots that come in that are anonymous, so you have no idea who's voting for who. My issue doesn't have to do with a current ballot. My issue has to do with a tweet that I saw from a writer who doesn't vote yet, but will be voting within the next 5 years. And he stated that he won't vote for guys like Manny Ramirez, Andy Pettit, A-Rod, guys who either got caught taking steroids, admitted they took steroids, but he would vote for guys like Big Poppy, who never really were actually caught. I have a big issue with this. I think David Ortiz was on steroids. I'm not the only one who thinks this. My feeling is, when Jose Canseco came out years ago, he said that the majority of guys in baseball were on some sort of performing-enhancing drug. People laughed at him. They thought he was crazy. But when you think about it, he probably wasn't that far off. Because you have the obvious steroid guys, the guys who got blown up, their bodies just looked different, their faces looked different, you could tell that they were on stuff. But you also had guys who were on the stuff that you never would have dreamed would have been on there. And how I know a lot of guys took steroids back in the day is when the testing really got into gear and Johnny Damon came over to the Yankees. Michael Kay mentioned that Johnny Damon had never been on the DL, or he hadn't been on the DL in 10 years, something to that effect. And my first thought was, of course he didn't go on the DL. He was taking stuff to prevent him from being on the DL. That's what these guys did. A lot of these guys weren't taking steroids or PEDs, HGH, all that good stuff. They weren't doing it just to hit the ball hard. They were doing it in order to recover from injury, like what Andy Pettit said he was doing. And the thing that drives me absolutely insane about this, the thing that makes me want to bash my head into a wall when I see a writer say, oh, I can't vote for guys like Manny or A-Rod because they got popped for steroids after the testing started. What about all the guys who took stuff before the testing started? And what about Bud Selig? Bud Selig all but injected shit, pardon my language, into Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire. Because after the strike in 94 and the abbreviated season in 95, it took a while for some baseball fans to come back. And what helped them come back to the sport? The home run race between Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. And if you look back at 1998 and you look back at a lot of the guys playing baseball, you can tell they were all on steroids. Bud Selig didn't care. They were making money again. It was all about the money. He didn't care. Bud Selig started caring about steroids when the government started caring about steroids. And even then it was ridiculous. And who's in the Hall of Fame now? Bud Selig. He's the one who oversaw this supposed black eye era of baseball, this horrible steroid era that put a black mark on baseball history. Please. If Bud Selig is in the Hall of Fame, every guy who played in his era, no matter how much they injected themselves with steroids, should also be in the Hall of Fame. And the other thing that bugs me is steroids don't always make a guy better. They may make them hit the ball harder, but if you look at the Giambi brothers, and I know I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I'm going to mention it again. Jeremy Giambi was taking stuff, and he wasn't bashing the ball out of the ballpark like his brother was. You also have to be a good hitter to do that. So this frankly silly way of thinking that steroids automatically make you a better hitter is not true. They make you a better hitter if you're already a good hitter. You have to have the ability to hit the ball and see the ball. And if you don't, they're not going to make you better. They'll make you recover from injury quicker, but if you're not already a good hitter, steroids aren't going to help you. And then what about this era of baseball with the juiced balls? Why isn't that a bad thing? They're inflating guys' numbers. Anyway, I think it's hypocritical for people to talk about the steroid era and act as if it was the worst era in baseball, and then completely forget about the fact that Bud Selig, who oversaw that era, is in the Hall of Fame. NBA fans, listen up. The Locked On NBA podcast is getting you ready for the start of the regular season with a special week of team preview podcasts all this week, plus waiver wire additions from Locked On Fantasy Basketball and rookies to watch from draft guru Chad Ford. I'll be tuning into the preview of the Knicks. Sorry, Nets. Subscribe to Locked On NBA wherever you get podcasts. So as I said, Pinstripe Alley helped me out today with their Today in Yankees History post, and I was highly amused by this because 40 years ago today, Dave Winfield became the highest paid player in Major League Baseball after George Steinbrenner signed the 29-year-old slugger and gold glove outfielder to a 10-year, $23.3 million contract. That's right. 10-year, $23.3 million contract. I know that's a lot of money for 1980, but it's just amusing to me because now we're seeing guys making that much money in a year. Like it's no big deal. And guys who aren't superstars. I think the most ridiculous contracts are basketball and football. You know, a lot of people cry about baseball players making too much money, but if you look at NBA and NFL contracts, they're even more ludicrous. So anyway, we all know how the 10 years with the Yankees went and how he got traded away to Toronto in 1990. He had the batting title race with Don Mattingly in 1984. I'll admit I was rooting for Don Mattingly because I loved Don Mattingly, still do. Everyone my age was either Mattingly or Winfield. Some people were Henderson, but I was Mattingly. Anyway, Winfield became a scapegoat for the 1980s Yankees. And people always talk about the 1980s Yankees as if they were horrible, but they won the most games. They just couldn't make the playoffs. If the wild card existed in the 1980s, you could have seen a couple of those teams make the playoffs. So in that sense, you know, I feel bad for Winfield just because of that whole Mr. May thing that Steinbrenner called him, and it just wasn't fair to him. Winfield was obviously a great player. He made the Hall of Fame in 2001. But again, 10 years, $23.3 million. That's amazing. And 39 years ago today, the Yankees re-signed Ron Guidry to a four-year, $3.6 million deal. I don't mean to laugh, it's just funny compared to now. 3.6 is nothing. There are guys who aren't even stars making $3.6 million a year. So I said we were going to talk about a random game from 2002. I would like to thank the Yankee Throwback account on Twitter for posting the video that made me want to talk about this game. The video was of Ron Coomer hitting his first home run as a Yankee. That's right. Ron Coomer was on the 2002 Yankees. The game we are talking about today is from April 6th, 2002. It was a Saturday. It was the second game of a homestand between the Yankees and the Tampa Bay Devil Rays at the time. The Yankees won the Friday game, which was opening day. I had attended that game. 2002 was the year Yes debuted, and Jim Dolan, who owned Cablevision, was having a bit of a conflict with the Yes Network because, as you remember, in the 90s, the Yankees were on MSG. So, Cablevision would not carry the Yes Network. Luckily for me, I was living in Staten Island at the time and had Time Warner Cable, so I got the Yes Network. My brother and father up in Rockland County did not get the Yes Network. So by the time we made it to opening day in 2002, the Yankees had already played a couple of series on the road. And the Yankee fans were not happy with Jim Dolan. And throughout the day, during opening day, people broke out into Cablevision sucks chants. And my brother and father joined in on those chants. And I just thought it was really funny. And I kind of felt special that I had the Yes Network and my brother and father didn't. So anyway, 2002. Let's do this. As I said, Yankees, Tampa Bay Devil Rays. The attendance was only 39,093 people. It was a day game. And here are your lineups. For the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, Jason Tyner, Randy Wynn, Steve Cox, Greg Vaughn, Toby Hall, Ben Grieve, Brent Abernathy, Bob Smith, Chris Gomez, and your starting pitcher was Wilson Alvarez. For the Yankees, Alfonso Soriano, Derek Jeter, Jason Giambi, Bernie Williams, Rondell White, Ron Coomer, Shane Spencer, Nick Johnson, Alberto Castillo was your catcher. Orlando Hernandez, El Duque, was your starting pitcher. Your umpires, home plate, Bruce Fremming, first base, Ed Rapuano, second base, Larry Poncino, oh, I remember him, third base, Tony Randazzo. It was a chilly day, 41 degrees at the start of the game. The wind was blowing from left to right at 6 miles an hour, and it was cloudy. I was at opening day the following year when it was like 36 at start time, and it snowed the day before, so opening day was pushed back a day, and oh my God, it was so cold. It was unbearably cold, and I even dressed in one of my old coats from Oswego. I went to college and was on the shores of Lake Ontario. I dealt with lake effect snow from October to May, so I had to bundle up when I was up there, and I bundled up for that game. It was freezing. So on this day in 2002, April 6th, 2002, it was 41 degrees, and the people who were at the game were probably miserable. So the Yankees didn't score until the bottom of the second. Ron Coomer hit his home run on the sixth pitch that he saw from Wilson Alvarez. It was of the solo variety because Bernie Williams flied out to center field and Rondell White lined out to center field before Coomer hit his home run. In the bottom of the fourth, Rondell White grounded out to second. Coomer hit a single to right. Shane Spencer hit a single to right. Then Nick Johnson hit a single to left that scored Coomer and advanced Spencer to second. And it was 2-0 Yankees at that point. In the bottom of the fifth, Rondell White hit a single that scored Derek Jeter, and the Yankees went up 3-0. And that's how it would end. Mo came in the ninth inning to relieve El Duque, so he pitched basically the whole game, and Joe Torre was like, hey, let's bring Mo in, why not? Jason Tyner hit a single, Randy Wynn grounded out, Steve Cox hit a single, then Greg Vaughn and Toby Hall struck out looking to end the game. Yankees win, Yankees win. So El Duque pitched 8 innings, only gave up 1 hit, walked a batter, struck out 7. Amazing. Wilson Alvarez pitched 4 1/3, gave up 3 runs on 5 hits. He walked 4, struck out 2, gave up that home run to Coomer. And then the rest of the pitchers didn't give up any runs. Let me see if I recognize. Oh, Victor Zambrano, Esteban Yan. Wow. Those are throwback names, huh? The Yankees ended up sweeping that series against the Rays. Then they traveled up to Toronto for Monday, April 8th, 2002, and they beat the Blue Jays 16-3. Holy crap. They had an 8-run inning in the sixth. Why not? I have time. Let's do this. This is always fun. My goodness. 8 runs. Whew. Oh, wow. Okay. Scott Cassidy was pitching for the Blue Jays. I don't remember him. Alfonso Soriano hits a single. Derek Jeter hits a single. Felix Heredia comes in to replace Scott Cassidy. Bernie Williams grounds out. Soriano makes it to third. Jason Giambi hits a single that scores Soriano and advances Williams to third. Jorge Posada hits a single that scores Williams and advances Giambi to second. Rondell White hits a single that advances Giambi to third. Posada to second. Yeah, poor Rondell White. You couldn't get an RBI with those two on the bases. Robin Ventura hits a double to change things up, and it clears the bases. Giambi, Posada, and White all score. Enrique Wilson pinch runs for Robin Ventura, and he's batting seventh. Shane Spencer grounds out for out number two. Nick Johnson walks. Alfonso Soriano hits a home run to score Wilson and Johnson, along with himself, obviously. Jeter hits another single. Williams hits a single. John Vanderwall pinch hits for, wow, Jason Giambi, and strikes out swinging to end the inning. So 8 runs on 9 hits, no errors, 2 left on base. And at that point, it was 15-1 Yankees. John Vanderwall. Now that's a blast from the past. So that's it for this episode of Locked On Yankees, which is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'd like to remind you that you can subscribe to this show in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Himalaya, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. And when you get into your car, you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Yankees. One more thing, if you could be so kind, please rate the podcast and spread the word about this podcast to your fellow Yankee fans. We would really appreciate it. Enjoy your Tuesday, and I will talk to you all tomorrow.